Good afternoon, Justice Berger. May it please the court. I'm Catherine Garrison. I'm representing appellants, plaintiffs below, David and Barbara Smith. This is an appeal of the Superior Court's decision granting summary judgment in favor of the defendant, Goodville Mutual Casualty Insurance Company, for failure to file suit within the two-year contractual limitations period. Plaintiffs had argued below it during oral argument that although the 2 years limitations period in the contract is valid under Delaware law at the time this policy was in effect, summary judgment was not appropriate because there remained a material issue of fact as to whether the defendant should have been stopped from asserting the contractual limitations period or whether it waived the contractual limitations period. Before I get into the legal arguments, I'll provide you with a summary of the background of the case. The plaintiffs in this case had contracted to have a home built in Lewis, Delaware in November of 2004. As part of that process, they purchased a homeowner's insurance policy from the defendant, and they purchased additional coverage under the policy for theft from a dwelling under construction. The contract had a provision in it that provided for a limitations period for filing suit for 2 years from the date of the loss, and also required them to comply with all of the terms of the contract before filing suit. The contractor in this case, things went terribly wrong, and he failed to finish the construction of the home, and the contract was terminated around April of 2006. At some point around that time, the plaintiffs discovered that backfill material that had been excavated from their lot during the construction had been removed by the contractor, and they were informed by the contractor that the backfill would not be replaced. The plaintiff, David Smith, who is himself in the construction business, also discovered that lumber had been overpurchased by a fairly significant amount using the construction funds that had been set aside for the construction of their home. The plaintiffs filed claims with Goodville in June and July of 2006 for under the theft of building materials provisions in the policy, for theft of the backfill material and the lumber, and for loss of use of their residence. And the defendant designated their date of loss as June 6, 2006.
There's no dispute on your part about that, is there?
No, there's no dispute.
Fine.
While all of this was going on, the president of the contracting company was indicted on several counts of home improvement fraud and one count of theft related to the construction of the plaintiff's residence and also to the construction of the residences of several other people. He entered a plea and was adjudged guilty of a misdemeanor for misappropriation of proceeds, which was the lesser included of the theft charge, which specifically addressed the theft of the backfill material from plaintiff's residence. He entered that plea on June 22nd of 2007, and then a restitution was awarded in August 29th, 2007.
Am I correct that if the only property that was illegally removed was dirt or fill, then the policy wouldn't cover that, right?
No, the policy covers theft of building materials, and I would argue that the backfill material is a building material that's necessary to complete the construction of a residence. It's necessary for grading the property.
Well, the insurance company took the position that the backfill or dirt wasn't covered.
Initially, they did take that position, but they later took the position in a letter from the vice president of claims in, I believe this was in July of 2007, that they would recognize the backfill claim if the plaintiffs could provide them with documentation or receipts showing that replacement backfill had been purchased to replace the backfill that was taken.
Okay, so it was proof of purchase that was required, according to the insurance company.
Yes, according to the insurance
company. And that's also true for any lumber that was removed?
Right, the insurance company was requesting receipts and invoices showing that lumber had been purchased.
Okay. And that proof of purchase was not furnished during the entire period of the interactions between your client and the insurance company?
Well, one of the biggest disputes in this case is...
is that a yes or a no?
Oh, I apologize. It was provided. Plaintiff's contention that they did provide proof to the extent that they could, especially as to the lumber. Mr. Smith was able to calculate how much lumber was overpurchased and provided those calculations to the insurance company and also provided invoices for the lumber that was purchased. And we later provided checks showing that those invoices had been paid. As far as the backfill material, we provided what we could because they had initially denied the claim for
right.
the...
Was there a purchase order or a proof of purchase of the backfill?
No, we sort of had to piece it together from invoices that we had, and some of them didn't specifically.
So no purchase, proof of purchase for the backfill, proof of purchase for the lumber, but apparently the insurance company's problem with the lumber is that you couldn't segregate out what was excess from what was necessary?
I am not sure what the insurance company's problem was with it. It seemed that they just... we're not comfortable relying on Mr. Smith's calculations as to how much the lumber was, how much lumber was excess versus.
Well, that was the issue, right?
I believe so.
Does any of this make any difference in terms of your argument? I mean, we have a problem, if you want to call it that, between what proof was provided by your client and what kind of proof was required by the insurance company. And I understand all that. But at issue here is whether for some reason your client should not be held to the two-year limitation on bringing a suit, correct?
Correct.
And you're saying that there's an issue of fact as to either estoppel or waiver. What exactly, you know, give me facts that would at least raise an issue about the insurance company being stopped from using the two-year limitation.
And specifically, what did they do to mislead you or your client?
Well, what they did is the contract had that provision that in addition to the two-year contractual limitations period, they had to comply with all the terms of the policy before they could file suit. And one of those terms was that if requested by the insurance company, they had to provide a sworn proof of loss. And the insurance company requested that sworn proof of loss statement on May, I believe it was May 8th, 2000, and... if you'll give me just a second.
May 19th, 2008.
May 19th, correct. May 19th, 2008, which based on their designation of the date of loss, that contractual limitations period would have run on June 6th, 2008. But on May 19th, they asked for the sworn proof of loss and gave them 60 days to provide that sworn proof of loss.
So what inference should we draw from that?
In order to, before they could file suit, they had to provide that sworn proof of loss statement pursuant
to... Right, you had to provide it.
Yes.
And one inference you can draw is, oops, we have only a month, we better get started. I suppose the inference you're asking us to draw, and you're claiming that a jury could reasonably draw as well, don't worry about the 2 years, we're going to... we're not going to hold you to it.
Yes, that would create a triable issue of fact that should be...
Well, wait a second. The letter, as I recall it, said you've got 60 days, and it said something about we're extending your time for 60 days to... or maybe it was the next letter said we're extending your time for another 30 days. But So we've got two letters, one in May and one in July of 2008, saying we need more information, and the second letter saying we're extending your time for another 30 days. So let's say that that creates an issue of fact with respect to the time from June 6, 2008 to August, whatever it was, 15th, 2008, because this letter said, we'll give you until that time to provide us this information. But you didn't file suit until 2009. What is there in this record that gives any suggestion that you could have reasonably believed that you now had as much time as you felt like?
Well, not as we felt like. I would argue that if the contractual limitations provision doesn't apply, then the 10 Delaware Code Section 8106 would apply, which gives a three-year statute of limitations.
Okay. So are you saying that because arguably the insurance company extended the two-year limitation in the contract by saying you have an extra 30 days, that because they did that, they eliminated that provision and they misled you into believing that that provision didn't apply anymore?
Well, they would either be stopped from being able to assert that provision.
Why? What did they do?
Well, they requested that sworn proof of loss statement.
And you could have provided it within the 2 years, right?
But they did give them 60 days to provide the proof of loss statement, which arguably creates an issue of fact as to whether they waived the provision or whether they should be stopped from being able to assert it.
But I'm trying, in order to create an issue of fact, you have to have been misled, right?
Correct.
By something they did. And the way I am understanding the facts, the most that you could have been misled as to is until the middle of August, that we are giving you a grace period beyond the 2 years. We're giving you until August, mid-August, whatever the date was in the letter. Where do you go from there? How do you explain any reasonable basis to believe that you had more time than that?
Well, it would be my understanding that if the two-year, what I stated before, that the two-year, if the two-year limitations period in the contract didn't apply, then the statutory.
Well, but is there anything that says the two-year limitation doesn't apply? Did they say anything about how the two-year limitation doesn't apply?
The insurance company did not specifically state the two-year limitations period does not apply. We're arguing that it was their actions.
Their actions being the fact that they gave you some extra time.
Yes.
And because they gave you extra time, that meant there was no time limit under the contract, as opposed to that they agreed to extend it a little bit?
Yes, that would be our position, that then that two-year provision did not apply. That they were waiving their right to assert it, or they should be stopped from being able to assert it.
And if they wanted to reestablish it, they had to retract that waiver somehow?
Or if they wanted to reestablish it, I would argue that they should have informed the plaintiffs in that letter requesting the sworn proof of loss that they intended to assert the statute of limitations if they didn't file suit within the two-year period.
But isn't there case law that says that the insurance companies have no obligation to inform the insured that a provision of their own contract gives them only 2 years?
They don't, unless there arises a duty to, for some reason, to inform the insured. And once they provided the insured with additional time, I would argue that that would create an affirmative duty at that point to then notify the insured that they were intending to assert the 2 years contractual limitation.
And is there any authority in support of that position?
I am not have not specifically looked in depth into that issue, but the court below did state essentially that there is, when it was discussing the estoppel issue, I believe that if there is no duty, there is no duty to speak unless an affirmative duty arises.
It sounds, your responses to Justice Berger's questions, if I understand them right, are that, you know, because your client got a letter saying we'll give you an additional 30 days to get this proof of loss into us, that somehow signaled that that the insurance company was going to forego any reliance on the 2-year deadline period. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
That's a waiver argument, but you're also claiming estoppel. I believe that you agree that to establish an estoppel, the insurance company must do something that misled your client into not submitting whatever documentation was required by the 2-year deadline. From what evidence in the record do you can you ask us to infer that the insurance company did anything to mislead your client?
Well, the misleading behavior would have been the fact that they requested that they fulfill a term of the policy just prior to the running of that 2-year limitations period and gave them 60 days to fulfill that term and then gave them additional time.
Well, what was misleading about that? I mean, I can understand, at least conceptually, the argument that your client somehow inferred from that the company was no longer going to rely at all on the 2-year deadline. That's one scenario, but it's quite different to say that the insurance company did something that affirmatively misled your client into believing that they would not, you know, that your client wasn't required to observe the 2-year deadline.
Well, the fact that they indicated that they were would consider paying their claims if they provided additional documentation, and the fact that they gave them past that the expiration of that 2-year limitations period to provide them with the documentation.
You have almost no time left for rebuttal. If you'd like to save the rest of it, you can.
I would. Thank you.
Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs, Justice Ridgely, good afternoon. Jeff Young on behalf of Defendant Appellee Goodville Mutual Insurance Company. as the court has already obviously dealt with, there simply is no waiver and no estoppel in this case. There is no conduct that can be pointed to on the part of Goodville that would have altered what the plaintiff's perspective was on this claim.
Well, let's stop for a moment. We all agree that the 2-year deadline was June 6th of 2008, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And in May of 2008, your client writes a letter saying, we need this proof of loss information, and you have 60 days in which to provide it to us. Now, 60 days, doing the math, takes you beyond the 2-year limitation. Wouldn't it be reasonable for an insured to understand that statement from your client to be the 2-year limitation is being extended until the end of this 60-day period?
Your Honor, I would argue no. Certainly the insured could reasonably believe that they had time past the statute of limitations to provide the proof of loss. And to recover under the policy, you have to have, it's a conjunctive set of requirements, cooperate, no fraud, all of those things. One of those is a proof of loss within 60 days. Another of those conjunctive elements is filing within 2 years of the statute of limitations. So I don't see how those cannot be distinguished. You have to do all of these things. And if you file within 2 years, just because you didn't get the proof of loss within 2 years, okay, we gave you an extra 30 days, fair enough. So we can't argue that you didn't get the proof of loss in time. But how can we be expected, how can we be deemed to have waived a statute of limitations when never was there a letter saying, pardon me, that the statute of limitations is being waived or an extra 30 days is being extended?
How's that different from the Closser case? How is this case different from Closser?
In two ways, Your Honor. First, Closser, in Closser, the insurance company provided a memo to the insured which was incomplete, was not the full policy, did not include the statute of limitations, and simply didn't give them enough information. More importantly, in Closser, the insured attempted to invoke an appraisal provision, which would have kicked it out of litigation and essentially created a binding arbitration like we have now so often. And the insurance company simply, either deceptively or negligently, never got back to the insured about, okay, we'll take this out of litigation. So the insured in Closser reasonably relied upon the invocation by the insured of this appraisal provision, which doesn't exist in the case at bar. The case here is...
It was a contractual provision of the policy, correct?
In Closser.
Right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And here the proof of loss is a contractual provision of the policy.
It's one of the multiple elements that has to be met by the insured to recover under the policy. Another of those is that you have to file within 2 years.
Mr. Young, just a factual question. The interactions, the dealings between the insured and the insurance company, were the insureds represented by counsel during that period? In other words, was it counsel for the insured that was doing the interacting and communicating with the insurance company?
At the very outset, Your Honor, no. But from early 2007 on, yes. I think after the first letter from the carrier was, I think, January, I forget the exact date, of 2007, denying coverage, reserving rights. Shortly after that, the insured got counsel, and from there on, counsel.
And that counsel got both the May and the July letters, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, and every subsequent letter that said the position hasn't changed, if you want to submit more, you may, we'll reconsider, but the position has not changed.
So in reality, although we're talking about what inference a reasonable person could draw from the first, the 60-day extension, and then the later 30-day extension, we're really talking about what a reasonable lawyer could infer.
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor. And let me just add, in reference to Justice Ridgely's question, this case is much more akin to the Betty Brooks case than it is to Closser. In Betty Brooks, there was actually a proof of loss requirement. Let me back up. In Betty Brooks, there's a property damage claim in January 26, 1978. The policy there had a one-year statute of limitations. October 24th, 1978, the carrier writes to the insured, who is unrepresented at that point, that you need to provide a proof of loss. That's just 3 months before the statute runs. It's not clear whether the proof of loss was received. In May of 1979, after the statute runs, insured gets counsel, counsel makes a demand, the positions don't change, there are some more letters, much like this case, and there the court again said, you don't have to indicate when the statute runs. This proof of loss has nothing to do with the statute of limitations. There's no estoppel. There is no waiver. I don't see how this case can be distinguished from Betty Brooks, certainly in conjunction with Woodward, which is, this court also decided. So from the appellee's perspective, Your Honors.
When you say that factually that the position of the carrier was a position has not changed, but we're willing to consider what you submit, doesn't that at least suggest that the position may change?
Certainly, Your Honor, it may change. But I think to take a contrary position, we'd be in here with a bad faith claim against an insurance company for refusing to remain open-minded to claims. On the contrary, you have in this case, in our case, an insurance company saying, we don't see coverage. and we still don't see coverage. If you want to change our minds, if you can dissuade us of that notion, we are open to that suggestion. But every time there was an effort or an exchange, Goodville said that's not sufficient. And so that position and the final letter from me to Ms. Garrison was the position has not changed. So there's never a correspondence or a writing or a statement by the carrier.
What was the date of that letter, the final letter?
December 19th, 2008 was my letter to Ms. Garrison, Your Honor, which was the final correspondence pre-suit, which again said the position of Goodville has not changed. Incidentally, it's page 123 of the appendix. The analogy I would draw to the court is this. If there's a parking lot accident and the plaintiff's lawyer calls the carrier and says, I demand $10,000 for the injuries my client suffered in this parking lot, and the carrier says, we don't think there's liability and we dispute the damages, but if you want to dissuade us of that, fine. And the plaintiff's lawyer then in another letter writes and says, here's the police report, here are two independent eyewitnesses who say it's your client's, your insured's fault, and the carrier says, okay, we concede liability. We don't think the damages are what you think they are. So there's correspondence back and forth. We demand 10,000, we offer 500. We demand 8, we offer 1,000. How these things go every day, all day in this state. And up to the point of the statute of limitations, 2-year statute of limitations, there's no settlement. Could the plaintiff in that case then say, well, you've waived that because we've continued to negotiate? And of course not. That would mean there is no statute of limitations in this state. And to hold otherwise would mean whatever the first position taken by an insurance company is would be locked in, and they couldn't even entertain negotiations after that for fear of waiving a statute of limitations. Obviously, that's not the policy that is going to do what needs to be done in this state to minimize litigation. It would open the floodgates to litigation.
Well, don't the facts in this case at least raise some level of an issue, if you will? Because, as I recall, the policy says that the insured has to provide a proof of loss within 60 days if requested, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So that certainly suggests that not every claim is going to require a proof of loss as such, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, fine. So we have the 2-year limit, and we have a provision that says, if requested, you'll have to provide us a proof of loss within 60 days. And then the insurance company doesn't actually request that until 30 days before the end of the 2-year period and says, please give us this proof of loss within 60 days. Doesn't the timing of that letter create an uncertainty at the very least that you expressly said we've got 60 days to do that, and the 60 days carries us over the 2 years? What are we supposed to make out of that?
Well, I hearken back to some of the questions posed to Ms. Garrison. First, Your Honor, I would say that, again, it's a conjunctive, and nowhere is the statute of limitations waived. I think that the carrier could say, even after, if the suit is filed within 2 years, and yet no proof of loss is filed, is provided, and the carrier says, we want the proof of loss, even though you filed suit, that's permissible under the policy. You have a right to demand that as the insurer. So they're entirely distinct. But I would further add, Your Honor, that as the court pointed out, if in this case, and I don't think this should dictate, but arguably, if in this case the plaintiff, the insured, had said, okay, you want me to do my proof of loss, so I'll just wait on the statute of limitations issue, and I'll provide it within the 30 days or 60 days or 90 days that you've extended to me, fine. Suit was filed over 14 months after that deadline came up. So what difference did providing the proof of loss a year and a half before the statute ran, or 30 days before the statute ran, or 30 days after actually play in this case? And clearly it's none.
Well, it'll be an easy answer for you to give under these facts, but are you suggesting that in light of the two letters that were written by your company, if the plaintiff had filed suit right at the end of the last extension, which was mid-August, that arguably you would be a stop from saying it's too late.
That would not be my position, Your Honor. I would still take the position that the statute has never been waived in writing implicitly or any other way. I think the plaintiff's case is stronger under those circumstances.
You say statute, you mean contractual provision?
Contractual statute of limitations, yes, right. Not statute of limitations. Contractual limitations, period. Yes, I'm sorry. Unless there are any other questions, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just briefly, I'd like to address Mr. Young's statement that essentially Goodwill was maintaining the same position throughout the process. I would argue that in this case, what was going on was in fact different, that while they initially denied coverage, they did in fact tell the plaintiffs in their later letters that they would consider coverage if they provided certain documentation, and then...
But you're still asking us to hold that if an insurance company is willing to negotiate with you or to consider your claim, that somehow extends the two-year contractual limitation.
Well, there was more going on here than just negotiation. There was the fact that they asked for that sworn proof of loss statement at the which is a term of the policy that with which they had to comply. There was the fact that they said that coverage would be triggered if the contractor took a plea.
Well, all of those facts are indications that there was some possibility you would reach an agreement and that they would pay some amount as part of this claim. What does that have to do with the two-year limit?
I think there's a distinction between settlement negotiations and an acknowledgement that there would be coverage if certain documentation were provided. They did more here than just try to negotiate settlement. They agreed that there would be coverage, but we're just waiting on documentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take this matter under advisement and take a recess.
We're adjourning.